Attention, men. Are you wanting to break free from porn or other unwanted sexual behaviors, but finding it seemingly impossible to quit? If so, we can help. My name is Jonathan Daugherty, the founder of Gateway to Freedom. This 3-day workshop is for any man who wants to overcome any kind of unwanted sexual behavior. So whether you're married, single, or divorced, this powerful and proven intensive weekend will help you uncover what is at the root of your struggle and discover the man God always created you to be. Space is limited, so call us today at 210-822-8201 to register. That's 210-822-8201, or visit bebroken.org/GTF.
We do not have the luxury of a straight line when it comes to how addiction damages the body and the brain and the heart and the soul. It is a mess. And I would love to just show up in therapy and get a bunch of ideas about how to fix myself, but that is just not going to cover all of the bases.
Good day, friends. Jonathan Daugherty here with another episode of the PSR Podcast, which is a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries. Now, before we get started in today's episode, I just want to invite you to prayerfully consider giving toward our mid-year partnership invitation called Deep and Wide. You know, you hear me say it every week. You just heard me say it 20 seconds ago. This podcast is a listener-supported podcast. And what that means is that, you know, we rely on listeners just like you to partner with us financially to continue bringing these amazing guests and relevant topics to you. So today, I just want to invite you to partner with us. Please support this ministry through either monthly giving or a special gift so that Be Broken can continue to serve you and others. Your generosity is going to help bring healing to the deepest places and hope to the widest spaces. You can offer your gift today at bebroken.org/donate. And I just want to say thank you for being a PSR listener and for your partnership in this ministry. Now, in today's episode, I sit down with Matt Winger to explore his powerful concept that he calls the Wheel of Destruction. Matt breaks down the 5 interconnected factors that fuel sex and porn addiction: trauma, maladaptive sexual experiences, attachment wounds, nervous system dysregulation, and brain changes. He explains how these elements feed into each other, creating a destructive cycle that impacts every area of life. Matt also shares some practical pathways to healing through therapy, community, and sobriety. Most importantly, he reminds us that recovery is absolutely possible. Your brain, your heart, and your body are capable of healing, and you don't have to face this journey alone. To get more info on Matt and the resources that can help your recovery journey, go to beginagaininstitute.com. For additional resources, you can visit our website at bebroken.org or look at all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And as always, friends, I want to invite you to rate and review the podcast after listening, because this really does help others who are trying to find this content. Now, let's jump into today's amazing conversation with Matt Winger. Well, all right, we have back with us Matt Winger. So, Matt, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Jonathan. Thank you.
Yeah. So recently, one of our staff members had seen a presentation that you had given, and it was on something you call the Wheel of Destruction. And I don't want to wait any longer. I want us to dive right in. So can you describe it a little bit about, like, okay, what does that even mean? What are we talking about here? And especially as it applies to addiction.
Yeah. So I was doing a little workshop for some guys struggling with, you know, sex addiction and porn addiction recovery. And, you know, I had planned to talk about something else, and they were kind of doing some Q&A with me, and that was fine. And through that process, I kind of whiteboarded this thing of like, well, guys, you know, the thing that makes sex addiction really complicated is that we have all these different data points and all these different spheres of what this thing is and how we're thinking about it, you know, with our relationships with our parents, trauma, sexual acting out behaviors, nervous system stuff, addiction stuff that's going on in the brain. And we kind of like whiteboarded out like all the different things that are kind of working against someone in recovery. And it ended up being this like kind of a pizza pie almost image of all the different things that we have to take into account and that need to be minded when we're thinking about recovery, you know, trauma, maladaptive sexual experiences, attachment wounds, the disordered nervous system, changes in the brain, all of those things. And the complex part on top of that is that not only are all five of those things present in almost every sex addiction case, not all, but almost every sex addiction case that I've ever worked with, they all begin to influence one another. And it's this pizza pie thing that turned into a wheel on the whiteboard in front of these men that I was speaking to. And as we started to chart out or connect all these different things and how they interact, it was almost as if this wheel was beginning to turn and all of the junk from each part of it was getting in to all of the other corners of it and jumbling everything up. And not only was it mixing everything up and trauma affecting our attachment and attachments affecting our relationship with our spouses and affecting our addiction affecting, you know, how our nervous system responds in any given moment. Like, you know, that wheel starts to spin the deeper and deeper we get into addiction, and that wheel is going to crush us, you know, if we, you know, if we're not careful and not minding each of those five things when we think about recovery. Another image that I had was just like a change jar, you know, kind of rolling down the hill. You know, my dad had this change jar growing up that was this big kind of mason jar, and that you get that thing rolling off of his desk and all of a sudden all that change was spilling out and causing a mess. What is that like for us in recovery when things are such a mess and they start kind of destroying, right? The wheel of destruction, destroying everything in our life that we hold dear, our relationships with our children, romantic relationships, sometimes work, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Everything in our life that has some sort of value to us is going to get run over by these things if we're not paying attention and minding all parts of this complex recovery process.
Yeah, you know, as you're saying that, I don't want to get too far ahead, but I can't let this thought go. As you were talking about how all these parts, they're not dislocated from one another, they're all sort of, they're connected. It made me think of how our design as human beings is an integrated design, is it not? So not to get too far ahead, but how often do we use, even in our own kind of recovery work, that word integrity, which is we are made. And so you're even saying on the negative side of things, of the destructive side, we can't get away from that part of our nature being we're integrated beings. So as much as we might want to compartmentalize and say, hey, you know what, I'm going to keep all those childhood wounds back there. You know what, I'm going to keep all these, you know, attunement issues or whatever, my emotional dysregulation. I'm going to think I can compartmentalize all this. Can you speak a little bit to that about how just the reality of our nature in terms of how we are made, we can't actually get away from the idea that we're integrated beings. And then talk about how that even impacts, like you said, this negative side of the wheel of destruction.
Well, I think, you know, Jesus lays it out very clearly for us. You know, we're heart, soul, mind, and strength, right? We have emotions, we have thoughts, we have kind of our physiology, you know, that's all bound up in not just in what it means to be a human, but in every bit of our existence. I'm bringing all of myself to everything. And as men, we would like to just bring some of ourselves to some things. And, you know, I'm going to bring my work self over here. I'm going to put on my dad hat and go over here. I'm going to go, you know, in my volunteer hat over here, you know. And you know, I say this a lot, you know, men are like lunch trays. Like, we want to have peas and carrots and the chicken, like, all separated into these different compartments. And God has created us as a unified being. There, everywhere we look in the scriptures, there's like, there is unity with distinction, unity with distinction. The Trinity is unity with distinction. What it means to be a part of a church is unity with distinction. What it means to be a human is unity with distinction. What it means to exist in a family is unity with distinction. And our recovery is the same thing. I am this unified being with these distinct parts of who I am, but I can't help those things from showing up in every part of my life. Now, the negative side of that that you're referencing is, as much as I would prefer not to, you know, all of the parts of what it means to be human are also being wounded in addiction. And if we keep that image of that wheel and all the different spokes of that wheel or that jar with all the different pieces of how addiction affects us, kind of rolling down a hill and all of those things being jumbled up, and not only are they affecting one another, they're exponentially causing harm to each other part. It's exasperating. The each issue is affecting and making worse every one of the others. If I don't deal with my attachment woundings, right, the break in the bond between myself and my caregivers as a young person, I am necessarily going to bring that in to my romantic relationship. And guess what happens when I bring my childhood attachment woundings into my romantic relationship? Well, that is going to ping off of my childhood stuff and reinforce some of those things. And if that dysregulated me as a kid, it's going to dysregulate me as an adult. I'm going to see that relationship through the lenses of my trauma, and on and on and on. It's all just bouncing off of one another. We do not have the luxury of a straight line when it comes to how addiction damages the body and the brain and the heart and the soul. It is a mess. And I would love to just show up in therapy and get a bunch of ideas about how to fix myself, but that is just not going to cover all of the bases.
And so what I'd actually love to do, and again, I know we're not going to be able to go to extreme depths on any of this, but I'd love to at least touch on all of the five things that you put in this wheel of destruction and at least help our listeners and viewers to understand what they are and then how to best address them in a healthy integrative recovery process. So the first one is trauma. Can you just help us understand, okay, what is trauma? And then how can that be best addressed in a healthy recovery?
Sure. Trauma is any event, experience that overwhelms the brain's ability to process it in the moment. So we tend to focus a lot on childhood trauma because our brain is still developing. And as a young person, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, all the way up to 20, we don't have the same emotional resources to deal with distress. And so it's a lot more likely that trauma is going to happen when I am younger, because it is more likely that my brain and my body will be overwhelmed because I have less resources. Almost every case of sexual addiction that I have worked with, I don't know, I'm into the, 1,500 cases or more at this point, has been, that case has carried with it trauma. Some moment in that young person's life where either who they are or what they had at their disposal was not enough to handle what was happening to them. It was some adult issue that was getting put onto them as a child. It was some feeling of powerless or hopelessness, given the resources they had as a young person, feelings of being trapped and unable to escape something harmful or scary. That is trauma, and it has affected and been at the root of almost every case I've ever worked with.
And so what is the key element for a person to address that and maybe heal from some of the trauma wounds that they've experienced?
Well, I would say this to preface that, like each one of these parts of the wheel kind of builds on itself, right? Before the wheel starts to spin and crush us. But at the very, like the very first step that I see in a lot of these cases is this overwhelm, this experience that goes beyond the brain and body's ability to process in the moment. And if we're going to talk about how to recover from sexual addiction and porn addiction, we have to be able to identify what those moments were. And some of those moments are going to be in the other parts of the wheel, like maladaptive sexual experiences and attachment wounds. Those are types of trauma, and we'll talk about those here in a minute. But identifying what those are, so learning a healthy description of what trauma is and being able to kind of peel back the layers for yourself on what some of those moments and experiences might be without minimization of those things or denial that they happened or not wanting to, you know, throw mom and dad under the bus or whatever the things that might be coming up around that may be. So being able to identify those and then actually working with a trauma trained therapist to process those trauma moments through and have healthier emotional outcomes in those sessions, you know, for the brain and the body.
Yeah, that's good. So another thing that you talk about is attachment wounds. And so can you help us understand what those are and then how those can best be addressed in a healthy recovery?
Well, I talk about trauma and then and maladaptive sexual experience. And then the third piece is that attachment wounds, because what happens either in that trauma or the maladaptive sexual experience, which what I mean by that is early introduction to pornography, molestation, sexual abuse, you know, walking in on dad, watching something or finding his stash of whatever, the magazine and the tree fort in the woods, you know, all of those types of introductions. What happens in response to those things, that either the trauma itself, the maladaptive sexual experience, is the response of the caregiver. And an attachment wound happens with an insufficient response of a caregiver. So sometimes the trauma can come from the caregiver. Sometimes the trauma happens outside the home. But the insufficient response of caregivers that are supposed to be attuned to that young person and comforting and present and soothing and kind and loving and affirming and validating of that young person. When those pieces aren't present, that child is going to learn over time that they can't go to that caregiver to get their needs met. And so they're going to have to come up with a new way to care for themselves. Almost every addict I've ever worked with, probably you too, Jonathan, have said to themselves, I guess I'm on my own here. You know, I guess I have to take care of myself. I guess I had a guy say to me a couple weeks ago, I'm my own backup. No one else is coming. I'm my own backup. As a little boy, he had that thought. And when we have those kinds of thoughts or experiences where our caregivers are not attuned or responsive or safe, consistent, reliable around these traumas and maladaptive experiences and, you know, bullying at school, whatever. When we have that insufficient response, then I'm going to be less likely to go to them to be cared for. I'm going to be much more likely to look to myself to care for myself. And if I've been exposed to these sexual behaviors, then I have a chance of going back to them as a way to change that emotional state from sad, scared, overwhelmed, whatever, angry, to a different emotional state. And I say this all the time to folks. The sexual behaviors as a young person that were not yet compulsive, not yet addictive, they didn't have to feel good. They just had to make us feel different. to change the emotional state that we are in to something else. Like for little kids, like all those emotions, they feel overwhelming. So it's like a freight train, and I have to figure out a way to derail this, or it's gonna run me over. So I'll go back to behaviors that I don't fully understand just because they make me feel different. And so if there's not an attuned caregiver in response to those things, then I'm going to not go to them to be cared for. I might go to these behaviors that I was introduced to. And then all of a sudden I've developed this little neural pathway in my brain where I'm going to associate distress with that sexual behavior as a way to.
And would you say that a lot of times in the attachment wounds and is where a lot of what we might call shame lies about identity really make their way in to that young mind? And can you talk about the impact of what that is? And also, if you wouldn't mind, because this was really helpful for me in terms of understanding how some of those attachment wounds happen in terms of what you've termed like the hot box and the cold box. And because I think that'll be helpful for our audience to be going, I'm really trying to figure out what this wounding might have looked like in my own life. So can you go there and maybe it'll make sense for why sometimes we carry shame lies for so long in our lives.
Yeah. If we talk about the five pieces of the wheel here, we're talking about trauma first, maladaptive sexual experience, and then attachment wounds. We're on that step three, and there's a Venn diagram here of how these things overlap with one another. But, you know, I talked about why the attachment wound leads us to have to care for ourselves, right? I don't have this safe, consistent, and reliable attachment to a caregiver. And that can happen in mainly two ways. And we use general categories at Begin Again Institute because we want to help the guys that come to see us simplify complex things so they can work on them. And the first simple category of an attachment wound is what we call the hot box. And in the hot box, it's an emotional environment with the caregiver relationship that is too hot. It's violent or abusive or chaotic. The emotional temperature of that environment is hot. And in that space, that young person is going to reach out for their needs to get met because all kids naturally do that. And they'll do it again and again and again, no matter what the data is that they're getting back up until, you know, a point when they say, oh gosh, this is not working. I'm going to stop reaching out. And in response to those early attempts to get their needs met, they'll get hurt, abused, made fun of, verbally abused, sometimes sexually abused, sometimes psychologically or emotionally or spiritually abused in response to their outreach to get their needs met. And in that hot box, if I'm reaching out to get my needs met and I'm getting hurt or made fun of or any kind of abuse in response to those things, oh, you're crying, I'll give you something to cry about, you know, that kind of thing. Then I have to kind of figure out a way to make sense of that as a young person, that I'm reaching out to this caregiver that's supposed to be there for me. And in response, I'm getting hurt. Well, kids do this thing where they kind of make up a one sentence story about how that or why that happens. And in the hot box, it's, well, I must be bad because this is how a bad kid would get treated. They would reach out and maybe I'm annoying and maybe I'm stupid. Maybe I'm an idiot. Maybe I'm a failure. Maybe I have to be perfect. And all of these messages are, or this one I hear a lot, maybe there's something wrong with me or I'm permanently broken or damaged. There's something wrong with me. That's why I get treated like this. All of these messages are shame messages that don't just describe what happened to us as kids. They follow us into adulthood. We're still trying to undo these shame messages. And addiction is just very good at trying to prove them true. And this belief that I'm not good enough and as a child is almost proven to be correct in the addiction, even though it's a lie, even though it's false. Here I am acting out of my addiction. And yeah, I guess I am not good enough. I guess, you know, I'm a bad person because I keep doing these things, or maybe I'm bad. So we end up with these same shame messages that we experienced in our attachment wounding as a kid showing up in and around our addictive behaviors. And the other one is the coal box. Now, I found like 80% of sex addicts that I've worked with actually identified more with the coal box than the hot box. Folks expect that there must be some really big, nasty, violent trauma that's at the root of an addiction. And they don't understand that actually it's that lack of attunement that is really the thread that binds almost all of these cases together. But in the coal box, you know, you can kind of guess from the name, it's not that there's present harm, there's lack of care, right? So we would describe the coal box as emotionally vacant, right? Not emotionally chaotic, but emotionally vacant, where I go to this caregiver and instead of them hurting me, they actually kind of have their back to me emotionally. And I'm doing all these things to try to get their attention, try to get them to turn around and care for me. And, and it's not working, right? And so I have to take care of myself. And then all those other shame messages are going to show up. But this time, it's not necessarily that I'm bad. It's that maybe I don't matter, right? Because they have their back turned to me and they're focused on these other things like my siblings or my special needs sibling or their work or employment or their own addiction or their own mental health or their marriage. And they're so focused on these things, they don't have much to give to me. So I end up with these messages of, I don't matter. My feelings don't matter. What I think about things doesn't matter. Maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe I have to be perfect. And then they'll turn around. Things like that. I think the root of the hot box is I'm bad. And the root of the cold box is I don't matter. And I think a lot of folks that are struggling with these things in addiction can kind of identify those thoughts for themselves.
And then how important, and you can talk about what are some of the key elements to really address those attachment wounds and how critical, and maybe we'll get to this a little bit more when we get to the kind of autonomic nervous system on just regulation and all that. But when you have come out of either the hot box or the cold box and you've got these shame lies in a healthy recovery, what does it look like to address those? What are some key elements for addressing that in recovery?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I would say interesting, but I think it's one of those of course moments. Of course, we were made for community. We were made for connection. God created us for connection. And what the attachment wounds tell us is that we can't have connection. I reach out and people hurt me, or I reach out and people ignore me and minimize me and deny me what I need. And those are the lies that are breaking us down. These are the lies that are pushing us to act out and to sexualize those things that it's an attachment need or an emotional need that I sexualize in addiction. And I think that if I can control it and keep it in this kind of narrow avenue of some sexual avenue through which to get that need met, then I can be in control. I can be safe. I have my hand on the spigot of when I'm going to get my needs met or not. And that makes me feel safe. It's consistent. It's reliable. And I can take control back of getting my needs met. But in reality, God made us for a community, authenticity, vulnerable and intimate connection with others. So I'm going to have a real hard time healing attachment wounds if I'm trying to do that in isolation. If I'm just going to go to like weekly therapy with my therapist and talk about these things, now I can build a bond with that therapist and to the degree that is professionally appropriate for them and they can be a safe person for me. But if it's just here, if it's just with this one-on-one thing, and I'm not in active community connecting with others and being vulnerable and authentic with them and learning how to build intimate relationships with other people in meetings, 12-step groups, having a sponsor, being Pure Desire, Samson Society, all of those great places where we can go and find connection with other men. That's actually where the attachment wounds are being healed. not, and let me say this really loudly, not usually right now in your partnered relationship or your romantic relationship. You know, I listened to this podcast and Matt Winger told me that I have all these needs and you need to show up and meet my needs, you know, spouse. And that's not true. Like, they're hurt. Betrayal takes a long time to heal from. They're not going to be Johnny on the spot for what your needs are right now. But guess what? You're an adult and you can find yourself in community with other men and you have a lot more emotional resources than you used to. And so I can find healing from my attachment wounds by finding community with others. And then the second part is the same as trauma healing. But I've got to go back and sit with that younger self in those moments in which that bond was broken with my caregivers and show up for him and be present to his sadness and pain. And a trauma therapist can do that. Powerful group therapy can do that. Those are the avenues that I think of when I think about healing.
That's good. So we've gone through three of the spokes of the wheel of destruction, so to speak. How about if you're willing, we maybe combine the last two or talk about the last two, because you talk about the autonomic nervous system damage and then changes in the brain. And I think those are closely related in a lot of ways. So can you talk about what that is, why it applies to this wheel of destruction, and then what are some healthy ways to address those in recovery?
Yeah, well, if we look at each one of these as building on the next, right, we've got trauma that could show up as maladaptive sexual experience and attachment wounds. That's like those traumas and sexual experiences are not responded to well by a caregiver that creates an attachment wound. Well, what comes out of an attachment wound? Well, all this dysregulation in my body, all right, all this activation, all this fight or flight responses in my body, or shutdown and freeze responses in my body that are responses to these threats to myself that we've talked about already, that are supposed to be managed in an attachment relationship. Now, my parents can't be with me 24/7, but if I come home from school and they are, I have a relationship with them that is such where I can count on them to listen and to help me with that bully at school, well, then that dysregulation in my body has a direction to go. And that safe adult can help regulate me. Hey, I'm sorry that happened to you. I'm going to come with you to school in the morning and I'm going to speak with your principal and we're going to make sure something like that never happens again, or whatever the attuned response is. That actually takes the dysregulation in my body down. And sometimes being scared and then being comforted is actually healthy for a nervous system. But when I don't have that attachment, that dysregulation in my body has nowhere to go, and I have to solve it myself, and I start using sexual behaviors to do that. And as I respond to fight and flight responses or freeze responses in my body over and over again with behaviors that are not designed to help me cope with those, my window of tolerance actually becomes smaller and smaller, where I'm more likely to be traumatized and more likely to be in distress, either into fight or flight or into freeze, which changes my nervous system and makes it a little bit more brittle over time, which in turn causes changes in my brain, in which, like I said earlier, the distress and dysregulation becomes paired with the sexual behavior. And so I'm going to go to that behavior when I experience that distress, which then floods my brain with dopamine and does harm to the brain and creating addictive neural pathways that are really hard to heal from as we get older.
Yeah. Now people hear that, when they hear that last thing about the changes in the brain, I think sometimes that freaks people out, because then there can be a sense of, well, it's hopeless, because I mean, you're telling me all these things are sort of stacked on each other and it results ultimately, and I have changes in my brain. Can you give hope that the brain does not have to remain static in those patterns, and that there is actually hope for all of these aspects of the wheel of destruction to be addressed effectively and in a whole comprehensive manner in recovery?
Absolutely. I mean, the way that God's made our brains is that they are what they're plastic is the term that we use in therapy, but I know most people don't understand what we mean by that. We think about it like bouncy. They're squishy. They can absorb some harm and they can kind of heal again. They can be squished like a squish ball and then come back to a normal size. The problem is that we've been rolling downhill in this wheel of destruction for sometimes decades. And so we first have to stop that wheel from moving, which is like we have to find help and try to establish even a small amount of sobriety so that I can stop causing like exponential harm to my brain and my body and my nervous system. Which, guys, there are lots of ways to establish sobriety and accountability relationships and software and monitoring software and joining a group, going to an intensive, going to a men's weekend with Be Broken or what have you, and gaining some kind of momentum in the opposite direction as that wheel is going. Okay, I'm going to push this thing in the opposite direction. So there are a lot of avenues to do that. In fact, I'll give you some really good data here. What we've learned about other types of addictions is that there's about a 90-day window that if I can establish establish sobriety, which just means I'm not acting out, for just 90 days, my brain begins to heal back to its kind of utero state. Now, I only have as many dopamine receptors as I have when I'm born, right? But I can get back to that original state just through establishing sobriety over a 3-month span. And in that place, my cravings are going to go down and I can learn to regulate around distress. And there's actually a lot of hope for healing if I'm addressing all 5 parts of this wheel. And it can be established in a relatively short amount of time if we can get to work,
Yeah. And what I love about that, Matt, is that, while this idea of the wheel of destruction, it does help us understand the crushing nature of an addiction and what it does to us and what it does to others. But I also love the fact that that wheel does not have to keep rolling in the same direction for the rest of your life. Like you're saying, these things, they're all integrated, but everything we've just mentioned here, there's a healing component. There are things that you can become healthy. You don't have to stay in your attachment wounds. You can heal from trauma. Your brain does not have to remain static in the patterns that it's developed. You can learn new attachment styles. So as we land the plane here, what additional just message of hope would you give to the person that is hearing this and going, well, I definitely know what this wheel has done in my life moving in that direction. But what about the person that wonders if they, in their situation, because sometimes we get very personal, like, yeah, but Matt, you don't know my situation. You don't know my wheel of destruction. Can you speak to that person, just the fact that there is hope, even if you are completely, despondent or think that there is no hope?
Well, I'll say 2 things there. One is, man, if you're listening to this and you think that there is no harm, no foul, if to continue to act out, I hope that this conversation has given you some insight into like staying in the addiction is doing harm to not just your relationships, it's doing harm to you. Okay. And the nature of the wheel means that it's going to harm everyone else in your life as well. But you're getting run over as well. So there is harm. And if you're keeping secrets and hoping that there's no harm being done, there is absolute harm being done to your relationships and to the people that don't know what it is that you're doing. They just don't know about it yet. And there's harm being done to yourself. So sometimes a wake-up call of saying, hey, like until I get some guys are still waiting for that rock bottom moment. And maybe this is it of saying, all right, I'm sick of doing harm to myself. I'm sick of doing harm to my relationships and the people that I love. I want to get out from under the wheel. And my word for you is that you absolutely can. Like God has given us the gift of science and modern medicine, which is teaching us over and over again that the God's design for creation is right embedded inside of us. There is There's nothing wrong with you. You have all of the hardware that you need. You have all the software that you need to find help and healing. You're not permanently damaged. Your brain can do these things just like anyone else's. Your nervous system can be regulated just like anyone else's. I'm always trying to convince guys that you are not terminally unique. There are other men that have found recovery that have been dealing with the same things that you are. And there are places out there like Begin Again, like Be Broken, that can help you find a start to healing when you're on the wrong side of the wheel. But help is out there, and there is plenty of hope for that.
Matt, thank you. As always, it's so good to to have you on and just be able to explain really complex things, but in a simple way to understand. Where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about you and the resources that you have for those who would like recovery help?
Yeah, beginagaininstitute.com is a great place to get in touch with what we're doing. We fly guys in from all over the country to be with us for 2 weeks and to get to know themselves and to walk through that deep dive on their own story with other men too. And we get to dispel the myths that I can never find healing and that I am alone in the group connections with each other and in that dynamic healing process. So we have great partners like Begin Again, like Samson, like Pure Desire, like, so many of that can, like, we can't do this alone, guys, and no one organization can do it on their own. We need to be in community. And I'm so thankful for you, Jonathan, and what you guys are doing at Be Broken. And it gives me hope to know that, we're in this together.
Yeah, that's good. Well, thanks again, Matt, for being with us.
Absolutely. Pleasure.
Yeah, well, listeners and viewers, we are going to put those links in the show notes, and we want to help you take your next best step to wholeness in Christ. So please reach out to us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.